TalkZone.com.
Now, the Wild About Pets radio show, the place to learn something new about household pets and wild animals. Here's your host, educator and naturalist, Susan Frank.
Hello, welcome to Wild About Pets. This is the place we talk in depth to leading authors and experts about all topics regarding household pets or wild animals. To make your listening experience more enjoyable and meaningful, I have a companion website, wildaboutpets.net, that allows you to see photographs of the animals we'll be talking about on the show today. To see these pictures while you are listening, click the purple Look While You Listen button you see on the Talk Zone episode page for today. To get to this episode page from my Talk Zone show homepage, just click on the photo for today's date show. That will then take you right to the episode page, and you will see the purple Look While You Listen button. If you click that, that'll take you to the accompanying photos that are on my own website, wildaboutpets.net. You might be aware, as I am, of the many types of working dogs that help people, such as therapy dogs, police dogs, the search and rescue dogs that work in disaster areas and in avalanches. But did you know about all the canines who have helped save lives by serving in the military? I have to admit, I did not. And then I came across the highly informative and surprising website of the United States War Dogs Association, and now I have started to learn the truth about how involved dogs have been in all the wars since World War I. My guest today is Ron Aiello, the president of the United States War Dog Association, and his stories of what these dogs have done and are still doing for our country in the current wars will astound and touch you as they have me. Welcome, Ron. I am thrilled to have you on the show today.
Well, thank you, Susan, for having me.
Ron Aiello was a Marine that served in Vietnam along with his military working dog, Stormy. And I have some photos from Ron's extensive website, the association's website, that shows you the dogs that we'll be talking about today. So if you'd like to see them while you're listening, make sure you click that purple Look While You Listen button that's inside of the episode page for today's show. Also, the phone lines are open today. It's March 12th. We are streaming live right now. And if you'd like to join our conversation and ask Ron Aiello a question about military working dogs, just call 888-463-6748. That's 888. Go for it. Or you can email me a question at susan@wildaboutpets.net. That phone number and the email address is also at the top of the page of photos. We do have a special free giveaway today. If you call in to ask a question or email me and are one of the first callers or emailers, you will win up to four free tickets to the Chicagoland Family Pet Expo at Arlington Racecourse that takes place in Arlington Heights, Illinois on March 19th, 20th, and 21st. Again, it's March 12th, and the number to call to ask a question is 888-GO-FOR-IT. Ron, what is the overall basic history of the use of dogs in the military?
Well, we go back to World War I to a certain degree with Stubby. Stubby was a small bull terrier that was one of the soldiers actually snuck on ship and took with him to Europe. And one night, Stubby woke him up in the middle of the night because there was a mustard gas attack, and it saved the lives of the whole unit. And then after that, he was called Sergeant Stubby.
Mm-hmm.
But we really didn't get into military working dogs until World War II with Dogs for Defense, which was the Department of Defense and the American Kennel Club, got together and started Dogs for Defense. And they reached out to the general public and asked them to loan their dogs to the cause.
Oh, that's and how it started. I see.
That's
okay.
How it really started, yeah. And there were about 30,000 dogs that were loaned to the military. And of the 30,000, a little over a third actually saw combat.
Hmm. Well, that's remarkable that people just decided to let their dogs, you know, leave their own homes and go serve in war.
Yes, they felt the cause was worthwhile. When we got to Vietnam, basically the same thing was done. People donated their pets.
How about today? How are the dogs obtained?
Today, the military has a civilian company. They contract with a civilian company to breed these dogs for the military. And then all the dogs are trained at Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio, Texas. And that's the system today. So there's not the, you know, I'll donate my dog or loan my dog to the military any longer.
If somebody wanted to do that, they would be turned down?
You know, most likely, yes, but it depends. I heard that right after we went into, about a year after we went into Iraq, that the for the first time since Vietnam, the military did ask locally in the Texas area for people to donate their dogs. We only had about 1,800 dogs in the Corps, in the military, and they were sending so many of them over to the Middle East that they were running short of dogs.
Oh.
They couldn't breed them fast enough. So in that case, then they did put a newspaper ad in and ask for people to donate their dogs to the military. But it was a very brief period of time that they did this.
I see. Now, a little bit later during our show and our conversation, we're going to be talking about you and your dog, Stormy, when you served in Vietnam. But what I gathered is that this was already your dog, Ron, and you decided to have Stormy train with you. Is that correct?
No.
Oh, okay.
Okay. No, I was in the Marines. I was stationed at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, and they asked for volunteers to go to dog training school. Then once the completion of the school, then I would be assigned to a restricted area, and I knew it would be Vietnam. And I had a dog, German Shepherd, back home who I missed very much, Snow. A white German Shepherd, and I figured, you know, I'm going to go to Vietnam anyway, eventually, so why not go with a dog by my side? I volunteered, and that's where I went to Fort Benning, Georgia, which was an Army base because the Marine Corps didn't have a training program at that time, and they assigned Stormy to me. So it was the first time I had met her. And she was 18 months old and just a lovely dog. We trained for 3 months, and then we were flown over to Vietnam.
Now, there's a photo of you and Stormy from 1966.
Yes.
And so it's photo number 6. And for anyone who's just joined us and wants to see these, you can get to the photos on my website, wildaboutpets.net. Or if you're already listening to the show, then you'd want to click on the purple Look While You Listen button that's on the episode page for today's show. And what we're going to do is we're going to kind of scroll up and down from photos. But here we have Ron Aiello and Stormy, and then there's a great little newspaper clipping also about you. Entitled Sniff Sniff.
There's actually a funny story behind that.
Oh, tell us.
And we had just come out into a clearing, so I searched the clearing ahead, and there was no enemy ambushes or snipers in the trees or anything. And we're halfway across the field, and there's this ravine we come across. And if you look at the photo, there are five, when we're walking across, is railroad irons from the track.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And they're sideways. You can see they're bent. They flex. And we have to go across this ravine, and one of the Marines jokingly says, well, how are you going to get your dog across? I said, we're just going to walk across. And he yelled back, he says, bring the corpsman up. He says, we may need him when this Marine and dog fall into the ravine. And if you look over my left shoulder, there's a Marine with a scarf around his neck.
Mm-hmm.
That's the corpsman. He actually came up just in case we did fall in, and he would come down somehow and rescue us. But Stormy and I just walked right across.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Going back a little bit, you know, you talked about Stubby and photograph number 2. There is a photograph of Stubby, who obviously was very remarkable. I love some of the story that Stubby held a German spy by the seat of his pants until GIs could secure him.
Right. Unfortunately, Stubby was, after that first gas attack, mustard gas attack, he wasn't quite the same as he had always been because it did affect him.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else was able to put, you know, their gas masks on, but, you know, of course, Stubby couldn't.
Right.
So it did affect his health to some degree.
Yes, you know, and later on I want to talk about obviously what I think people would think that there must be injuries and what is it like for these dogs. So we'll get into that a little bit more. But I do have to just get back to the very first photograph that I used here. And I know we've got to address this because this is photo number one, and I use this to introduce, you know, our subject today. And it's a dog with a helmet on looking like it's gazing through some very advanced equipment. Ron, is this dog just posed this way, or is this dog really, you know,
no, doing it? Posed this way. This is actually a helicopter gunship.
Very cool.
Okay. And the handler and the pilot were talking, and he says, "Can I get a picture of my dog up in a seat?" So they set this up, and it was sent to me to put on our website. And it was about 3 years ago. I was at the McGuire Air Force Base show, and the pilot, who was over in Iraq at that time, it was his gunship. And he came over right away, you know, wanted to introduce himself.
Oh, sure. Later on, maybe you can tell me the name of the dog, and I'll add that to the caption. But anyway, so moving a little bit forward, and we'll be kind of brief about some of the past, there's another famous dog by the name of Chips that served in World War II. And this is photograph number three, also showing what kind of looks like another German Shepherd.
Yes. Chips is probably one of the most famous dogs. Actually, Disney made a movie, Chips.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
About this dog. He had actually single-handedly went into a bunker, a machine gun bunker, and attacked one of the German soldiers. And he attacked him so viciously that the other two soldiers that were in there actually surrendered.
Wow.
Yeah. Because they did not want to get bit by the dog, so they surrendered. And General Eisenhower had come by about a week later to see the handler and the dog, and he went to pet Chips, and Chips bit him in the hand.
Oh, dear.
And the colonel there started to yell at the handler, and Eisenhower stopped the colonel and says, he says, he's just doing the job he was trained to do.
That's right.
You know? So he was the most famous of all the military dogs, Chips.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what kind of jobs these dogs do. Now, obviously, we heard a little bit that they can be aggressive. And later on, we'll talk about the training for that, because you have so many photographs where you can see they are being trained. But give me, like, the overall, what are some of the basic tasks or jobs that the military working dogs perform?
Well, during World War II, there were about 32 breeds of dogs that were used, and they were used for sentry duty, which was patrolling a section of a perimeter of an air base or high security area, and that was to keep any infiltrators from coming in. You had scout dogs, which were the scout dog team would go in front of the patrol and lead the patrol and try to detect any danger, such as an ambush or a booby trap or a sniper in a tree. Had tracker dogs, which they would track the enemy. After a firefight and the enemy would leave with their wounded and all, you would track them down to see where they went, whether they were hiding in caves or tunnels and so forth like that. The Navy had water dogs. They actually put them on the front of a boat, and they could actually smell. If you were going down a river, say an enemy was hiding, in particular Vietnam, they'd be hiding underwater, breathing through a bamboo tube.
Mm-hmm.
The dog could actually pick up the scent of this person's breath coming through that tube and alert on the enemy before you. What they would do is they would wait for you to come by, and when your back was to them, they would come out of the water and then shoot you from the back.
Mm-hmm.
So you would try to detect that before you got to that area.
And, of course, who better than a dog to be able to do that with remarkable sense of smell?
And then they had ammunition dogs, which would run up and down the lines with a saddle on its back and have ammunition in it.
Hmm.
You know, okay. Messenger dogs would go from point A to point B. The messenger dogs had two handlers. So they would set one in command post and then one out in the field. So the dog would go back and forth between the two handlers sending messages.
Okay. Speaking of handlers, Ron, how are the dogs matched up with particular handlers?
Well, in my case, we went to school, and for the first week it was nothing but classroom lessons. We learned about Vietnam. We learned had some language courses. And then at the end of the week, what they did was They told you who your dog was going to be, who you were going to be assigned to. And what they did during that week, they evaluated you. They looked at your personality. Were you aggressive? Were you laid back? And then they matched it with one of the canines.
Okay,
so
I
they
see.
Want the personalities to be pretty close.
Sure, that makes sense. And later we'll talk also about the relationship. I do just want to let everyone know that the phone lines are open. We're streaming live today. It's March 12th. If you'd like to call in and ask a question about this most fascinating subject, the military working dogs, the MWDs, call in at 1-888-463-6748, or you can email me at Susan@WildAboutPets, and we're looking at photographs, fabulous photographs off of the U.S. War Dogs Association website that Ron so kindly allowed me to put on my website here. And you can see those by clicking the purple Look While You Listen button inside of the episode for today. Let's move to Vietnam now. We're kind of whizzing through the war and talk about, of course, two famous dogs, one which will be Nemo, and then, of course, we'll talk a little bit more about Stormy, your dog.
Okay.
So I love you have a whole page on Nemo. And, you know, you'll notice I have connected to some of the pages directly
yes.
on your website. And for those people who remember Paul Harvey and his feature called The Rest of the Story, there's a great Paul Harvey, The Rest of the Story, recording about Nemo. And so after this interview, everyone should click on that and listen to it because you won't want to compete with our sound. But tell us a little bit about Nemo.
Nemo was a sentry dog. At the Tan Sanut Air Base in southern Vietnam, and his handler was third-class Thurnberg. And what their job as sentry dogs was to patrol a section of the perimeter of the air base, and on this one particular night, they were walking their perimeter, and Nemo alerted out into the darkness. Now, sentry dogs barked and growled when they alerted, and that was to frighten the enemy. Hopefully, they would retreat. And Thornburg looked out into the darkness, and he could see three figures coming towards him very quickly. So he started to fire at them because he didn't have time to radio in for backup. Nemo immediately went and started attacking them. Thornburg got shot in the shoulder, and he went down on the ground. And as he's looking out towards the enemy, he sees Nemo still fighting these three Viet Cong. So that gives him enough time to call in for backup. Well, backup arrived, and when they looked, Thornburg was laying unconscious. Nemo was laying across his chest, protecting him.
Oh.
But what's really amazing about this story, that when the enemy fired back, they shot Nemo's right eye out.
Yeah.
And he, even though he had his eye shot out, it tore out the side of his face, he continued fighting the enemy until they retreated. One died and two retreated. And the first thing he did was go back to protect his handler and his friend.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the story of a dog team. They work together.
And, you know, Ron, obviously, you know, you'll tell us a little bit later how much these dogs are trained to do some of the things. But every time I hear stories about the remarkable bond and what dogs are willing to do, you know, in relation with humans, clearly, it goes beyond some of the training of skills, and it just gets into this almost mystical aspect of canines that just boggles my imagination. And I'm sure you must see and have heard so many examples of that.
Yes, definitely. I mean, it's really difficult to explain what that bond is between a military dog and a handler versus, you know, you have your dog back home.
Right.
There's such a difference. I've never experienced the emotion and the attachment to a dog until I went into the military. And I've been out quite a few years, and I've had several dogs, but I still have not been able to get that same attachment.
Mm-hmm.
The bond is good, but it's not quite as, it's just not the same.
Yes.
And one of those reasons is that when you're a military handler, your sole responsibility is that dog. You're with the dog 24/7. When you're out on a mission, you never leave your dog alone. If you have to go, you go eat, you bring your dog with you. You play with your dog, you work with your dog. If you have to go to a meeting, your dog goes with you. You never just, you know, say, hey, Marine, would you watch my dog while I go in here?
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that because then you're putting your dog in danger. And you're there to protect your dog.
Right.
And your dog is there to protect you when you're out on a mission.
Mm-hmm.
So you're each looking after each other and depending on each other. And the bond just keeps getting stronger and stronger and stronger as time goes by.
And no doubt you've told us a little bit more about you and Stormy by just relating that to us. It is time for us to take a short break. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more right after this.